And welcome back. Veronique LeCapper and I are joined now by Carl Brooks, the Regional Administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, to continue our discussion on the landfill situation in Bridgeton. Carl, thank you so much for being with us.
Don, you're very welcome. Good to talk with you.
Well, you've heard part of the conversation, I guess, but I'm curious as to why this process is moving so very, very slowly. At least it seems to be to those of us watching and certainly to the residents out there in Bridgeton.
I'm sure that neighbors who live around the area have been frustrated at the relatively slow pace of activities. I'd assure them that this agency has their safety and their well-being as our central mission. We try to balance being accurate on the science, thorough on the engineering, and also move along just as promptly as we can. So some of the issues do require a fair bit of technical work. We understand that we need to get it right. We aim to get it right. And I know that that probably takes a little bit more time than some people would like. We're sympathetic to the concerns of people who wish they could snap their fingers and make action happen right now.
What are those issues that are taking so much time?
Well, a couple of the specific ones involve getting a design and location approved for an isolation barrier. EPA has ordered the parties who are responsible for the radioactive material at the Westlake site to construct at their expense, not at taxpayer expense, but at their expense, an isolation barrier that will make sure that that radiologically impacted material, which sometimes goes by the shorthand RIM, is kept separate from the heating event over on the Bridgeton side of the landfill. Getting that design to satisfy the concerns of this agency, the scientists and engineers at this agency, and getting it located so it separates does take some time.
I have a question about that, the location of that fire break, because back in less than a year ago, a landfill fire expert hired by the Missouri Department of Natural Resources came out with a report in which he recommended building a fire break right away and also locating it closer to what people call the neck of the landfill, the Bridgeton landfill. In other words, much closer to the fire than what EPA is talking about doing. You're talking about building the fire break essentially sort of along the edge of wherever the radioactive material is. Why are you building it there, and what's taken so long?
Veronique, the first point I'd make is that the actual location has not been agreed on yet by the engineers and scientists working at EPA. Ultimately, we're the agency that has to make sure that location suits the goal of keeping the subsurface heating event at Bridgeton away from the rim. There may be different opinions that different experts have about where that should have been constructed, but our goal is to locate it in a place that keeps the radiological material separate from the subsurface event. And getting the survey work done to support that location has taken some time during the winter and early spring.
You've had some contact, obviously, with Attorney General Koster, and he is anxious to get this thing going and going more quickly. He indicates that that barrier, construction on the barrier, could actually begin now without having to have that regulatory go-ahead. Is he right on that?
Well, I know that General Koster told me the other day that he wished he could snap his fingers and have construction start yesterday. Sometimes I share that same view myself, but the key thing to remember is that the location needs to be placed in an area that we know will separate that subsurface event from the radiological material. We need to make sure that alignment fits, and we need to make sure that the barrier construction is feasible because it has to continue to do its job for some period of time. Getting all of those different technical pieces together to satisfy the scientists and engineers at EPA will take some time. I'm confident, though, as I said last week when I was talking to a variety of folks in St. Louis, that construction activities looking ahead toward that isolation barrier can commence fairly soon, and we at EPA believe that fairly soon means within 90 days.
And will the EPA be taking over oversight of the other landfill?
Well, the EPA has responsibility for managing safe, long-term protective handling of that radioactive material wherever it's located within the boundaries of the Superfund site. That's the purpose of the Superfund law. So if it's RIM, it's EPA's responsibility. no matter its location within the entire boundaries of the site. So this agency knows that it has responsibility to manage that for the long term, to keep people safe, and to make the right technical steps so that in the long term, the site remains protective of human health. That's our job. We're up to it.
Do you agree that there's no health risk now, as Republic is saying?
Well, what's important is the opinion and the scientific study of people whose job it is to interpret health data. There's continuous air monitoring at the site. Our partners with the Missouri Department of Health, as well as the Department of Natural Resources, say that that monitoring establishes that the air is meeting all applicable limits that are essential to protect public health. It's clear that the drinking water that folks use throughout that part of the metro area is safe. It comes from a completely different aquifer. And it's also clear that the rim, the radiological material, remains within the boundaries of the site. It's not migrating off-site. The groundwater testing establishes that.
Unfortunately, neither the Missouri Department of Natural Resources nor the Missouri Department of Health are here on the line with us. But one of the points that Ed Smith raised earlier in our conversation was that the Department of Health and Senior Services has not been conducting chronic studies at all. So in other words, assessing the risks of long-term exposure. You and I talked about this last week. Have you had any new information on that, whether that's being done or not?
No, I don't, Veronique. From last week, I don't. I know that the Department of Health and Senior Services in the state of Missouri has responsibility to make sure that the air that meets the legal limits is protective of human health. So the data that we get from our partners in Missouri shows that the air continues to meet all the tests established in federal and state law for public health.
But on the other hand, we've got residents complaining about what sounds to be serious health issues to me. We're talking about bloody noses, vomiting, migraine, headaches. We've had any number of people that have complained very strenuously that there is a health issue here and that they're suffering as a result of it.
I hear those complaints. I believe those complaints are genuine. I know that people have felt burdened and imposed upon now for almost 2 years because of that heating event. I'm very sympathetic. This agency is sympathetic to their concerns. We're doing our best with our partners in the state of Missouri to make sure that the information we have allows us to do our job, which is to make sure that the air at the site meets the legal limits established in federal and state law. I suspect that the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services continues to look at that air quality. It's possible, although you'd have to ask the Department of Health whether they do long-term studies of chronic exposure.
Could I be excused for saying that sounds to me like passing the buck?
Well, it's not intended to pass the buck. It's intended to establish one thing, that this agency's focus on public health requires us to make sure that the air emitted from the site meets all the state and federal laws to protect public health. Based on the information that's gathered regularly, it does. And that's this agency's job. We depend on a partnership with the state to get that job done.
The earlier guest we had on for Public Services says that this, we're calling it a fire for lack of a better word or for a simpler way to put it, whatever is happening down there that's causing all this consternation, is moving at a rate of about 6 inches a month. Actually, it's more likely to be moving 6 inches a day. And if that's
the case, I think he misspoke.
He apparently did misspeak. If it's moving that rapidly, what happens if, in fact, whatever it is that's causing all this heat reaches the radioactive waste?
That question is one that this agency has been tasked to take a look at. The scientists with the agency's Office of Research and Development are near to completing their assessment of that hypothetical possibility, Don. I think everybody went into that study understanding it was a hypothetical with a very limited chance of occurring. The agency study is near to being completed. When it's done, this agency will share it with the public, both folks who live in the Bridgeton area, as well as with local elected officials and members of the congressional delegation. Senator Blunt has asked for it, as has Senator McCaskill.
I guess I'm wondering how you can say that with any confidence when you're not done mapping where the radioactive material is. So for all you know, it's a lot closer to the fire than we think it is.
Based on the location of the subsurface event, I know some folks call it a fire. I think it's probably more accurate, and Veronique made this point earlier in the show, that it's a chemical reaction or a subsurface event. Based on that location and based on the known location of radiological material, there is time to construct an isolation barrier to keep that subsurface event away from the radiological material, both its known location and its likely location. That's an important point.
So are you saying you do know where the radioactive waste is?
The radiological testing that's been done has established locations that are more accurate than this agency had before. The location of the barrier will be designed to keep that material away from the subsurface event.
I guess I'm wondering why that mapping wasn't done back in 2008 when you initially made the decision to leave the radioactive waste in place. I'm a little surprised that that decision didn't involve mapping where the radioactive waste was located.
Veronique, the agency's responsibilities under Superfund require us to put together as accurate a picture as is possible at the time on the location of the material that we're responsible for under Superfund, based on the evidence in the historical records, plus the sampling that was done back in the early part of the 2000s, the agency put together a plan to manage that. One of the benefits that I've got to say, one of the benefits of getting the design location for this isolation barrier is that the quality and the quantity of data gathered about RIM is much better now than it was a decade ago. It does establish that the RIM that's been identified is still a substantial distance, over 900 feet away from what's thought to be the edge of that subsurface event, giving the engineers plenty of time under EPA direction to get that isolation barrier established.
I'd like to take a call now, Carl. Byron is joining us from St. Louis, and he has a question concerning radiation as well. Byron, go ahead.
I want to thank you, Don, first of all, to have this program, because the people of this area definitely deserve getting the word out about all these complex issues. In the paper today, it said that these levels were safe, and any time I talk to a radiologist or a health expert, they say there is no safe level of excess exposure to radiation. So there are alpha, beta, and gamma emitters, and no disrespect to the Missouri officials, they don't have the expertise or the equipment to keep track of these wastes. So, you know, definitely the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers taking these FRUSRAP-generated wastes that were licensed by the U.S. government is the government's responsibility to clean them up. And people in North County and North City have suffered long enough from it. But, you know, I really am disappointed to hear people say a safe level of chronic exposure to alpha, beta, and gamma emitters. Could you respond to that, both Veronique and Dr. Brooks?
Veronique, you first.
Well, I'm not an expert on radioactive waste, and I actually think the paper this morning was focused more on the fumes coming from the underground fire than it was on exposure to radioactivity. But I'm going to let Carl talk about what levels of radiation have been actually measured at the site and whether those are safe or not.
This agency's monitoring data that's been gathered about radioactive emissions at the site are gamma emissions. Those emissions remain protective of human health. The data establishes that. The material is buried at such a depth, it's anywhere from 35 to 65, perhaps even a little bit deeper into the landfill with soil and other debris over the top of it. The alpha and beta emissions from that are captured by that material, or so the radiation specialists who work for the Environmental Protection Agency tell me. I'm not a scientist myself, so I'm like Veronique. I have to rely on the expert opinion of others.
I have an email here that takes a different approach to this discussion, and perhaps it's not one for you to discuss, Carl, but Andrea writes, the situation with the Westlake landfill seems to be an example of environmental classism. Working-class white and African-Americans live near the landfill. Their political power in the St. Louis region very small. If the odors from this landfill smoldering event bothered people in the wealthier neighborhoods, the solution would have already been put in place.
That point is one that reminds me of our responsibility at the EPA to protect the public health of people no matter where they live, no matter their economic condition, no matter their location in Metro St. Louis. This agency puts the same effort into containing the waste at Westlake and making sure that people who live and work there remain protected, and they are, as we would if it were in Chesterfield or Ladue. There is no difference whatsoever in our level of attention and concern. This agency is responsible for making sure that people's health and safety is protected against waste, no matter where they live. So we do our job. We do it the best we can, regardless of what congressional district or state assembly district somebody lives in.
Is there any kind of a timeline, Carl, that we can put to all of this? You've talked about the various studies and the various players who are involved. We've talked about delays and putting that barrier in place. Can you give us anything approaching a timeline for this?
Sure, Don. Let me give you a sequence on that. The conversations between the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers that will produce an agreement by the Corps to provide construction expertise to us, that's very near. I anticipate that being concluded in the very near future. Construction activities to get ready to build that isolation barrier should begin within 90 days. The longer-term question about what should be the best way to handle that radiological material at Westlake, the scientific work goes on that. The engineering work continues. I think it would be just best to say we're moving in parallel. We need to continue to protect public health to get that isolation barrier in. We then need to conclude the scientific studies and move toward a remedy selection. And those will be moving in parallel.
Is it fair to think that at some point this contamination would be removed entirely?
That is certainly one of the alternatives that this agency has directed studies to be conducted about. We've looked at total removal. We've also looked at removing portions of it, and we've looked at continuing to keep the material there with a health protective cap. Those are the choices that have to be explained and defended with science and engineering. This agency ultimately has to select from among those. I know that some folks have said in St. Louis that because the Corps handling the FUSRAP sites usually tends to excavate materials, this site should now be handed over to the Corps of Engineers. It's a point that the agency makes. Under Superfund, we have the authority to manage the site. Congress would have to direct a transfer to the Corps of Engineers. Even if Congress did so, which it certainly could if it wants, the Corps would have to apply the same public health standards to select and implement a remedy as we're following under Superfund.
I'm going to have to.
We are lucky, though, that we got Corps of Engineers working on this project with us. They're
going to have to stop it there, Carl Brooks. Our time is up. I want to thank you so much for being with us. He's Regional Administrator with the Environmental Protection Agency. Veronique, thank you also for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
Thank all the other
guests as well.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about this week's opening of the long-awaited Ballpark Village. Our guests include, that is, Cardinals President Bill DeWitt III. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, KWMU. I'm Don Marsh. Thanks for listening.